Good evening, everyone, and welcome to RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. I'm Chris Michael, so glad you could be with us tonight. We have an hour of some great high school football talk on the program, so let's get right to our introductions. Two fine coaches to talk with us about PIAA football and football in general. We have Paul Reduzzi, former head coach at Pinargel High School, has also been doing some duty with our other guest here, Kevin Ronalds, the head coach at Palisades High School. We have some breaking news about Paul we'll reveal in just a moment. And, of course, the co-host of the program, senior sports writer of The Morning Call, Mr. Keith Edward Groller. Gentlemen, welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here. Paul, we'll touch on this right away to get it out there. We have some breaking news. You stepped down at Pinargel this past year, but you're not going to be on the retired from coaching very long. You have a position opening up at Liberty High School.
Yes, I had a couple days home, and I don't sit home very well, so it's time to get back to work. Coach Truby offered me a great opportunity to work as a defensive coordinator at Liberty High School, and with their tradition and the direction the program's going, I'm very excited about that.
We're so glad to see you back. We always appreciated going up to Pinargel. You were always so nice to us in the media, and we're glad to we're going to be seeing you next fall as well.
Thank you.
Kevin, congratulations on your great season. Let me ask you about the season overall, first of all, because you ran through the Colonial League, awesome season, and you had a great run in the state playoffs, too.
Yeah, it was a great season. It was a lot of fun, and we enjoyed it. Our community rallied around us, the school community, the greater Palisades community, even outside our district a little bit. And it was nice to see, and I enjoyed meeting and talking to a lot of people I haven't seen before, hearing from people telling me about how much they enjoyed it, enjoyed our kids, our players. They're good young men on our team. And so it was a great season. We all enjoyed it.
It's always great when the smaller schools, I think, have success in our area because, Paul, you've been there with some great runs. Everything has to go right. If you have a lot of injuries, you just don't have five linemen that you can plug in there. So you got to do a lot of mixing and matching. You may have to coach a little bit more. But it's fun when everything comes together and you have that kind of success.
That's right. I always remember when you talk like that, our high school coach, Roy Cortez, always talks about how real coaching is when you only have two tackles and one of them's limping towards you in the middle of the game, and I always think about that. Yeah, everything's got to go right health-wise, maybe a call here or there, whatever, but everything's got to go right to kind of go deep like that.
Yeah, for me, it was a kick. As you know, Chris, we've been talking about it. I mean, I've never covered a home game at Pinargel before this year.
It's fun down there.
Got to do two of them. And I got their one win of the season, which was nice to be there for the Green Knights. Somebody had a win that day. I'm glad it was you guys, Paul. And then three times down the Palace, several practices too, but it really is neat, that small school feel. Mm-hmm. The Knights at his place, especially the Saucon Valley game with the sirens.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking this is what it's all about. This is what high school sports was intended to be, a rallying point for a community. And we need it. I mean, this is such a divisive time in our world right now. And it just made you feel good to see. And then when Kevin's putting on the medals on his kids, the tears are streaming down his face. That was, you talk about lasting images. That certainly is going to be one of them from this 2017 season.
Yeah. Kevin, I'll ask you about this first, and then we have some other issues to talk about with the Conwell Egan game. But, I mean, what was it like going into that game? And we've seen teams, we've seen Pinargel, we've seen Caddy, we've seen other teams from the area go in against, to borrow a term from our John Leone, a buzzsaw team. And the odds are stacked against you, but you guys played pretty well, I think, all things considered.
Yeah, we felt we had a real chance to compete, and we did. We did it. We really did not play all that well in the first half. We were down 21-3. Second half, I thought we outplayed them and played well, and that's what we really thought. We were going to have to play that way, not perfect, but near perfect, not turn the ball over and have turnovers to compete. They have some good players there. We like getting out of the area, to play somebody new. We played 14 games the first 12, even the first two district playoff games were Colonial League teams. Mm-hmm. Week 13 we got to play Lee Height, and week 14 we got to go down to Philadelphia. So we liked getting out, playing somebody a little bit new for the first time. But yeah, they're a good team. They're a talented team. a lot of good skill, and we competed hard with them. I was proud of our guys. They fought right to the end.
Do you think that's a factor? I felt the same way a little bit with Parkland. They had not been out of the EPC at all.
Yeah.
All 13 previous games were in the EPC. Mm-hmm. Some teams are good, some teams okay. You, same situation. You didn't see anybody outside the league until week 13. I think it helps if you do get to experience, preferably a quality opponent, get out there and see a different style of football than you're used to seeing. I think that might help at this time of year.
It could. There's so many factors. I mean, if you're talking about why maybe sometimes we don't compete as well when we hit a Philadelphia Catholic League school, there's a lot of factors. And or when we get out of the area, there's just a lot of factors that go. We were talking about it earlier, and there's a lot of things that come into play when you're going to schedule outside of the area.
People would have to leave their comfort zone.
Yeah.
You know, the ADs would have to be willing to open up 2 to 3 weeks where they've got a schedule, and that's what the small and,
that's,
small
that
and big
the problem. They yeah. like they like just calling up their buddy and saying, hey, where sometimes it and I think you want to play somebody outside, but you want to play a good team. You don't want to play just somebody to fill out the schedule. When you're looking at a non-league schedule, Paul, you want to play somebody that can help benefit your kids later on.
Right.
I mean, even if you lose the game, you're getting an experience that could benefit you.
I think, you know, what it makes it tough, and I had to do this previously when I was at Belvedere, is when you know you're good, you want to put yourself in those situations, and you know you're going to be able to compete. Mm-hmm. You know, I had a great group of kids last year who wanted to work, but we weren't going to be able to go outside and compete against somebody. So if we'd have been on a 2-year or a 3-year commitment, that would have been a real tough game for us. So that's kind of, you know, maybe the bigger schools can do that and make a 2-, 3-, 4-year investment in that and commitment. It's tough for the small schools. You know, it really is, because we would have to be able to have that foresight for 4 or 5 years down the road to schedule those games.
Well, for you, Kevin, I remember, I believe you were at Allen in the days when the EPC was just 5 teams. And you had
yes.
to play a lot of people, and you had to travel good distances just to get a game in. I don't know, where did you play up at Hazleton
one time? We played up in Wilkes-Barre. We played down in Coatesville. We played out in Shamokin all in the same year.
Wow.
Pottsville had joined the league, but North Schuylkill, I remember having mm-hmm. to play them. We were all over the place. We were scrambling.
Well, the controversy that has fallen out after the game, and nothing to do with Palisades, but more of Conwell Egan, and there was just another article posted online a few hours ago about it with a commentary, and that's Conwell Egan, as probably most of you know, had a player who was not on the roster, was with another team, and then transferred in to the state of Pennsylvania and transferred into Conwell Egan, and then played on that team and was eligible. By all accounts, I know, Keith, you've talked to Bob Hartman about it. Apparently, it's okay to just have players transfer in if you have a need, you know, regardless of what the reason is to transfer in. Apparently, that's the rule, and that's okay with it.
Well, as it stands right now, if the one principal signs off, doesn't contest it, and it's agreeable between the two schools, the kid's eligible to play. Now, Hartman, I had a good lengthy conversation, and I'm going to have those comments in a column tomorrow morning. Hartman says we're going to try to change that. He's a part of this new competition committee that is looking into issues to slow down. Look, you're never going to stop transfers. Mm-hmm. You're never going to. This is not about bashing anybody either. I'm not going to bash the private schools. We've seen some transfers that, as I've said many times in various outlets, the worst transfer I ever saw was a kid that was at Easton for 3.5 years going to finish up his career at Nazareth. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah.
But we got to tighten up and make it harder for something like this to happen. Hartman told me it was above. Was it within the rules? Absolutely. Was it ethical? Not really. Did it stink? Yes. Yeah. But right now, they couldn't block it. There was nothing that could be done to block it.
Paul, what's your reaction as a head coach?
I won't comment on what comes from the top in the PIAA, but I could tell you they weren't going to make a decision until they check with the Whipple and the Philly League. They're not going to go off on their own without agreement from them.
Yeah.
Other than that, I'll let it go at that. But as far as ethical, you know, as coaches, we tell our kids all year, you know, you're fighting in the pitch with your brothers, and we try to build all that. I don't know the Conwell Egan coach, but I can't understand after 28 years of coaching how he could have approached a kid, a player, who had been with him all year, summer camp, the whole deal, and told him he wasn't starting in a state playoff game because they got another player from another school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't, and he can contact me and we can talk about that, but I can't fathom how a coach could do that to that player.
Yeah.
And what message he's sending for next year to ask those kids to work in the offseason and do the things that we need kids to do.
And that seems to be the downside of all of this. I mean, you know, regardless of schools or positions or even sports, it's the sportsmanship is getting completely lost in this. And it's almost like an afterthought that, you know, we look at the kids, and it's a great point that you brought up. What about the kids? And we're always talking about, you know, we always hear, let's do it for the kids. Where is this where does this benefit the kid? It doesn't benefit any individual kid. I mean, what does that kid get out of coming in, playing at a school, playing in that one game? Is he going to be helped that much by it? It's more the school's going to benefit by it.
I would venture to say 10 years, 15 years down the road, that medal is going to mean less to the coach than that damage did to that kid who had made that commitment and now is stuck.
And then you said that's going to be an article in the Morning Call tomorrow?
Yeah. And again, you know, we're way behind in this. I mean, this should not even come.
Because it's happened before.
This should have
been rectified. It happened in basketball.
Should have been rectified a long time ago. I'm going to tell you a concern. I mean, you know, there's raw emotions at these high school games.
Sure, yeah.
Okay? There's raw emotions. The Palisades people, great people. Kevin can attest to that. They're great people.
Yeah.
But, you know, it hurts. It hurts when you see how your season end, a 13-0 football team that works its butt off, that did everything right in the community, all whether it was in school, on the field, in the community all year long. It hurts. And I'm just worried that we're going to have an incident with anybody because it's getting so contentious now. I hope the PIAA will look into this because last thing I want to have to write about is some incident in a parking lot where somebody is tragically hurt.
I think we've been close a few times.
Well, sports is supposed to be the fun and games part of this world.
Yeah.
And too much time now is being spent on negativity. And you can't even go to high school, which I love high school sports. I want nothing but to write about games, good kids, good coaching, that kind of stuff. Good stories like Palisades was and Lehighton was this past year, too. And this is just putting a dark cloud over something that should be a shining light for our communities.
Yeah. By the way, he's mentioning Lehighton because his cameraman is from Lehighton and has been asking him all year long to keep talking about
That's
the
right.
Indians at nauseam, even though they're not even in our coverage area. But you did get that plug in there. You said parent involvement, too. And Paul, you've been around a long time, too, and Kevin. What has that been like with parent expectations? How has that changed over the years? There's so much social media and interaction, too, but how has that changed over the years?
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, you go first.
Well, it's parent. I think the biggest change is what everyone's outcome, what parental outcomes, even student player outcomes. People want to use it as a vehicle to pay for college now. So.
Yeah.
There's a lot of trained coaches. We go year round in the weight room and things like that. And now there's outside training, outside trainers, and there's a lot of things outside your own program to help train and prepare kids to play better and to maybe play in college. Recruiting services nonstop. I have parents ask me about this recruiting service, that recruiting service, and that part's all changed, I think, and puts a lot of pressure on the athletes. When really, in the end, it's just play as well as you can and see what happens. Most players are not going to get college paid for from it. I got to play in college at Division III school, but it wasn't paid for because of football. But it was still the best 4 years of my life, and. That's where I try to get them out there, but message I try to get out there to them as far as not putting so much pressure on themselves. But as far as parental involvement, like at Palisades right now with me, we have great kids, and I always tell everybody we have great kids because we have such great families. Our parents are really have supported them, I think, the way they're supposed to be supported, and just make sure that they have everything necessary to compete. And play as well as they could. If I ever need anything, I tell them, and they try to figure out how to get it for us. Mm-hmm. The parental involvement at Palisades right now is it's what everybody wants right now.
Paul, What's your experiences at a couple different stops?
I was happy to spend those 4 years of college with Kevin too. Yeah. At times, so that was fun.
Can I ask you about those stories too, or are not supposed to talk about them yet?
No. But yeah, I've been really lucky. The three places I've been to have towns, you know, Opaquan, New Jersey, Belvedere, New Jersey, and Pinards. I have towns that really did care a lot. Yeah. You know, not just the parents, the alumni, those groups. I think the thing that I've seen change with the parents the most is communication. And the year-round stuff, you know, now we're asking the kids to do a lot more year-round, which does cut into the family time more, you know, and you know we try to communicate with them, we try to make the time we spend with them the best, you know, make the most out of that time so we don't cut into it, but I think it does put a strain on parents at times when, you know, we're talking three-sport athletes and everybody's pulling at them, and the parents start making some decisions. But for the most part, I've enjoyed, you know, great relationships and success in dealing with the parents.
You know, I had a coach a year or two ago say, I know this would never happen, but I would love if we could all get together and have a month-long truce, that everyone agrees, we take 1 month off, you know, plan the summer vacations, plan whatever you want to do, and just take 1 month off. Would we ever come close to anything like that again, or is this year-round football, year-round sports here to stay?
I don't know if we will. I would sign up for that, though, I know, but I don't know. You know, I could tell you like how football has changed because of the year round and the 7-on-7s and the passing camps and all the training that you're allowed to do now. The product on the field is better than ever. It's better than ever. And I think it's more exciting than ever. But it does take a toll. It'll take a toll. It is a grind.
It'd be better for everyone. I mean, coaches, players, families. You know,
at least the players, after a couple of years, are done. And the coach, we just keep going on. You know.
I'll say one thing with Kevin. I agree with him. It's better. But my first year of coaching, 1990 in New Jersey, you weren't allowed to have contact with your players until September 1st. We played two games this year before September 1st. Yeah. And I'm pretty confident that the teams we put on the field were well coached, and they were physical, and they played good football. Now, we didn't have the knowledge because there was not nearly as much film, you know, and it was a different game because it was a power football game. But just the fact that, you know, we're competing all summer doing things now, and those kids, they were on their own. And that built them together as a team, and they had to prepare themselves by going through the X's and O's on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, two games now before we could ever have contact with them before.
Keith, you have so much power. Can't you get this? A month-long truce.
I'd love it because I don't have a summer anymore.
I know.
I mean, you know, I cover those summer basketball tournaments at Cedar Beach. We have the McDonald's game generally late June. You got the and now we start heat acclimation on August. This year was August the 7th, and there goes my summer. So, I would be all for it. Pick a month, June, July, whatever. I'd love it.
All right, well, make sure you pick up the morning call tomorrow. Keith will have a decision on that, how to solve that, along with some other great details. Our special guests in studio, Paul Reduzzi, Kevin Ronalds, along with Keith Groller and myself. Time for tonight's trivia question to roll that out there and give you a chance to win tonight's prize. Bethlehem Catholic, by the way, is going for a semifinal victory over Inhotep this weekend. We're going to be hearing from Nick Lincoln, the Inhotep head coach, in just a little bit. But Bethlehem Catholic's quarterback Javon Clements became the sixth BECA football player this year to surpass 2,000 yards passing. Who are the other five? And you don't have to go really far back into the vault to think of all five players that have done this. So which five players prior to Javon Clements has passed for over 2,000 yards with the Golden Hawks? And here's more information on how and what you can win.
You could win a $10 gift certificate to use to see the latest movies and the hottest music, sports, and pay-per-view events on RCN On Demand. You can only win one gift certificate every 4 months, but if you haven't won a prize in the last 30 days, you may be able to win another great prize. Call or email us right now with your trivia response. Callers get priority, but if we don't get a caller with the correct answer during tonight's live sports talk show, we'll take all email responses and conduct a random drawing on our next live show to determine the winner. Watching the show on replay or VOD? Send us your guess now, and you just might win an RCN On Demand $10 certificate. Good luck with Sports Talk Trivia.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guests are Kevin Ronalds, head coach at Palisades High School, Paul Reduzzi, soon to be the defensive coordinator at Liberty High School next fall, joining Keith Groller and myself. We still have that trivia question out there, looking for the five other players prior to Javon Clements, who passed for over 2,000 yards passing. Keith got it wrong, too. So if you get this one right.
I got a couple names right.
Yes, you got a couple right.
But there was one that I thought for sure was in that list, and he's not. I'm shocked.
So if you can get this right, you get extra props because you got something right that Keith hasn't gotten right. So we're getting some emails in now. A couple other things I wanted to ask you guys about, though, and it's great to have your knowledge here because you've been around for so many years. The concussion issue has been a big issue, too. And we're going to get to some PIAA thoughts in a minute, too. But concussions, you hear about it all the time. There was an article in the Morning Call recently about concussions in other sports. And I know some parents are getting very scared about it. You know, a lot is done. Technology is improving in terms of the development of the helmets. But all the protocols and everything you have to go through, and you, as head coaches, you have to kind of be up on that too. So, Paul, kind of take us through what has developed in terms of head coach dealing with this over the last few years.
We don't hold up our fingers anymore and say, how many fingers am I holding up? I mean, you know, again, early 90s, we did not have a trainer at Belvedere. You know, so it was kind of up to us on the sideline to make a decision. And, you know, it's great today that those things are out of our hands. And to the parents who are concerned about it, I can tell you, you know, 28 years of experience, this is so safe right now. Mm-hmm. And the way that we've changed, and it's all coaches. You know, we take the seminars. We do the things that, you know, our ADs ask us to do. And just the safety has changed so much. The helmets have changed so much. And everything is so much better now. We taught tackling wrong for a long time. I mean, we taught put your head on the ball. So I've been sticking my head across his body, across his thigh pads, and taking that full contact. And, you know, Pete Carroll has educated a lot of coaches on some good ways to do things. Mm-hmm. Is it different? Yeah, because, you know, we are guys that were around in the 90s, and it was supposed to be tough, you know, to do bull in the ring, you know, and to do those type of drills. And, you know, we don't now, you know, and we got to find different ways and creative ways through drills and gadgets and things like that to get it done the right way.
Kevin, what do you have to go through in the protocols and so forth when someone goes down with an injury?
Well, like Paul said, probably the best thing is that it's all out of our hands. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's got a trainer. We have two outstanding trainers and a team doctor. It goes right through them. So, like, our protocols, what I have to go through, I wait for the trainer to tell me, you know, how everything's going and when someone's coming back. We've been very fortunate at Palisade. I wish I had the statistics on me, but I don't. But we've had very few concussions, and I mean very few, and some of that is just the way we, you know, Paul talked about teaching tackling differently. We drill it and practice differently, and we do a lot of, we just try to take care of our players differently. The rule changes. I remember when the rule changes were first coming around, people were wondering if it was going to ruin the game, and I was one like, boy, this is going to be a lot different. Well, the game's safer than ever with mm-hmm. the rule changes, safer than ever. And anything that used to be very violent things, you know, is really a penalty now. And it's been good. It's been great. I don't think anyone would deny that. It's been really good.
Yeah. You mentioned heat acclimation, too, I wanted to ask you about. Has that been helpful at all? I know last year it really didn't work out well. It was probably the coolest week of the summer when you had heat acclimation. But what's involved in that? Because a couple parents asked me this year, what is that? And, you know, is that something that's helpful? And I guess it's something that's going to continue now.
It will. Heat acclimation is where we go without pads. It's exactly like it sounds. We're supposed to acclimate ourselves to the heat for when we are doing two-a-days with full gear in the middle of summer. And so there's no heat issues that way. These days, I think with the way football's gone year round and practicing, you're heat acclimating all summer long.
Summer, yeah.
So really, you're not doing anything differently. And I know last year we'd go out on the field at 7:30 in the morning during heat acclimation. We'd go, and we weren't really heat acclimating then. Second practice, maybe we were, but it's all dependent on the weather, like you said.
Yeah.
But quite honestly, by the time we get there, we're heat acclimated already. Yeah. And that's probably most programs around here.
I just want to say, look, I agree with him. I think football is safer now than it's ever been. We have more knowledge. We have more precautions in place. We certainly have proper protocols that if a kid shows any sign that, you know, that he's not right, we get him off the field. And yet, I got to tell you, Kevin, and you know, I was at a number of games this year, including a couple Lehigh games, and then Wilson. I had a Wilson. Who was Wilson playing? Banger, late in the season. And there's nothing scarier than that ambulance coming on the field. And I agree that the sport is safer. And I'm a strong advocate because I believe football is the true game of teamwork. Mm-hmm. You can get away with individualism in baseball, basketball, hockey, whatever. But you can't succeed without football, everybody coming together in teamwork. Right. So I think it's the best game going. And I hate to see it under siege. I hope we continue to strive for health concerns. I don't think we can worry about it enough.
Yes, you're right. And we have to be able to convince parents that it's safe. And it is. And I try to talk it up whenever I get the chance. It's safer than it's ever been. And, I would kind of tell a parent, almost like if your son gets the opportunity to play pro football and doesn't want to, like, those guys are taking some beatings. And those guys, in the past, like, those rules were needed. Those guys suffered. Mm-hmm. But high school football, we're all very much aware, and we've been taught, we're very much aware of what's going on out there. And all coaches, I think, are very prepared about this. And the best thing was, like we had said earlier, was when there are issues, it goes right to the trainers. We have nothing to do about it. No coach is put in a situation where
it's going to make it tough to see.
Yeah.
So it's so many things going on, too.
It's out of our hands.
With the game.
I'll add to that because it's not just the coaches and the trainers. I had an issue with an official last year where he grabbed my player because he saw him take a hit, took him out of the game, and saved him because we didn't see it. The trainers didn't see it. He was on top of it, you know. So those guys have been educated also because if he'd have stayed in and taken a couple more hits, it's a case where he goes through the protocol, he's back on the field the next week. If he had taken a couple more hits, you could have lost him for a month. You could have lost him for the rest of the season. So the official seeing that hit and being proactive was a great thing last year for us. Yeah.
All right, we have a phone call. We'll get to Chris from Easton, wants to talk about the playoff situations. Chris, welcome to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, Chris. How are you?
Good, thanks. First of all, I wanted to congratulate Coach Ronalds on a great season, going as far as they did. And then on those same lines, I mean, I just wanted to kind of ask you guys what you thought with the PIAA going to 6 classes recently. You know, why not do something like Jersey did, where you separate the private schools from the public schools, maybe keep the 4 public divisions, and then those 2 extra ones be a small school private and a larger school private? Because I guarantee you, when we watch the state championships, the majority of those schools are going to be private schools. And, I'll hang up and listen to you, but Chris, on another note, maybe turn up the heat in the studio a little bit so Coach Raduzzi could take off his jacket and stay a while. You know what I mean?
Well, you should get a Liberty jacket very soon.
Listen.
Yeah, there we go. All right, thank you. I'll hang up and I'll listen to what you guys have to say.
All right, thanks, Chris.
My eyes still hurt from watching our defense play this year, Coach of Toronto.
Well, I mean, look, this is brought up. And the answer, and every time I see Dr. Lombardi and our good friend David Micah Jr. from EasternPAFootball.com, he's been advocating this for years. Yep. Now, he finally went to Lombardi. Evidently, Lombardi was at the Parkland game. And Lombardi told him what he's been telling me for years. No, we are not touching it.
Me too. Yeah.
We are not touching it. The state legislature has to change it. The state legislature was the one that basically disbanded the PCIAA and brought everybody together. It's not the PIAA doesn't want to touch it. It's got to be the state legislature. And if somebody wants to take that ball, I think it might pass. But right now, and I know because we're neighbors with a state that does it, people think Pennsylvania should do it. It's not as easy as people think it is to do that, because there's going to be litigation involved if they do take that step.
Well, Paul, correct me if I'm wrong, but when New Jersey went to that, a lot of schools were happy with it.
Yeah, I would be interested to see a poll of those schools, because I was coaching in New Jersey at that time, and a lot of those schools were happy, because what it did, they were still able to schedule the publics that they wanted to, and the Bergen Catholics and the St. Peter's Preps and the Boscos. Now they were able to go out of state.
Yeah.
So now they were out of state
which is great for
playing two or three games, which helped their recruiting, which, you know, which got them more exposure. Those coaches were happy about it. So I'd be interested to see. Now, you may have some of the smaller parochial and private schools that have a problem with it. But, you know, the experience I had in New Jersey, they were happy when they were disbanded, not from the playoffs, but from their individual leagues, because it opened up their schedules. And, you know, and those programs have certainly, you know, continued to be successful. So I'd be interested to see what the bigger schools would think about that.
So, and again, because this is a great point, too, and I've heard people talk about this, too. They want to get on District 11. They want to go on PLAA. It's the state legislators. So you should probably contact people in Harrisburg, your local administrators. If you truly feel that a change should happen, maybe go after those people.
Well, I was a kid of local ADs. I was like 10 years old or whatever in 1971 when it was actually, I believe, it all started, as I know the story, that Central Catholic won the East Penn Championship in basketball, but they could not compete for a District 11 championship. So somebody, either a guy in the state legislature from was a Central Catholic alum, said, this isn't fair. We should be allowed to compete for a District 11 championships just like Allen and Deerfield and everybody else around us. And that's what started. I can't remember his name, but it was actually a local person that got it rolling to basically disband the old PCIAA and get all the private schools involved with it. So now it's got to be reversed. Somebody's got to take the initiative. If you want it to happen, somebody's got to take the initiative to get it reversed.
All right. It's time for Growler's Grumblings, where Keith sounds off and talks about everything and anything on his sports mind. Keith?
Well, I just wanted to salute and look, we have one team left, and I hope, again, even though you may not be a Becca person, may not have. Look, it's good for the Lehigh Valley to have a team out there in Hershey. We got one team left. They got to get past Imhotep, a very tough opponent on Friday night. I hope we can get all behind the Golden Hawks and see this happen for them. I want to commend Palisades, though. I want to commend Parkland. It is very, very hard in this age of high school football to go through a season undefeated, both the Pirates and the Trojans. Very different schools in terms of size, but they both had great kids, they both had great coaching, and hats off. I know it was a disappointing Saturday for both communities, but hats off to the Trojans, hats off to the Pirates for being champions, and from all accounts, great kids on and off the field. My hats off. You don't have to be a state champion to not make your community proud. Certainly the kids of Palisades and the kids of Parkland did that this year.
All right, we'll have more high school football talk coming up right after this timeout.
Yeah.
Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call. Our special guest, Paul Reduzzi and Kevin Ronalds in studio, joining Keith Grohler and myself. You know, you guys have been around, and you have some great stories. I don't know what you want to say or not say, but you guys have gotten along and been close friends over the years, too. You played against each other. And, you know, especially as Keith found out this year in the Colonial League, it's always nice when the coaches have good conversations before the game. Sometimes you're talking about strategy and everything. And you don't always see that in other sports or in other leagues and so forth. But, I mean it's great to see you guys always getting together, you know, coaches in general, and then also the two of you talking about it. Is the Colonial League a little bit special from, you know, the EPC or the LVC when you guys coach in there, or Paul in New Jersey?
You know, I think two of the places that I've been with Hopatcong, which was in Sussex County, and it was just a 10-school county, and you played everybody in the county, and there were schools that are similar, you know, where there was a big school sort of like Southern Lehigh, and then a bunch of schools the same size. And I just think you had coaches who are on the same page, you know, and understand kind of going through the same thing with their kids, with the parents, with the X's and O's. And, you know, it's been really a lot of fun for me the last 11 years and building the relationships I have. And it is, Colonial League is competitive. It's week to week. And, you know, I really, really enjoyed coaching against the guys I did and competing.
And you look back at the last 10, 15 years of teams that have had long run in state playoffs, you have just about every team included. Penn Argyle, Palisades, Saucon Valley, Northern Lehigh, Wilson, Caddy, just about everyone, you know, you guys butt heads, and then someone goes on and has success in the state level.
Yeah, I remember when I first came to Palisades as an assistant 10 years ago, and 2 years in a row, we were in a district championship against Palmerton. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Palmerton had great teams and still does. And but as far as like Colonial League, there is, I think, it, if I compare it to my 10 years when I was in the East Penn Conference at Allen, when I got to Allen in 97, there was a lot, some turmoil going on, you know, between the Catholic schools and that I really knew very little about. And I was there, I think it was it was the week of our third game, and all of a sudden I had no idea what was going on. I read the paper, and our league broke up. Yeah. You know, that's when he formed the Mountain Valley. I was right in the middle of it. Yeah.
Those schools
left for the Mountain Valley, yeah.
You were stuck with the five-team league.
That's when we were stuck with the five-team league, yeah. But there was some animosity, and I was unaware of it. I was completely unaware of it. But as it turned out, I there was more animosity even after the league split up, you know, because it got tough for everybody then. And but yeah, there was it was a tough time then for a little while. But yeah, the Colonial League, it's been so stable for so long. Having a closed schedule, just the stability in the league and Paul said, it's just a very competitive conference or league that people just compete in rather than claw and scratch at each other. I mean,
the biggest difference I saw was, you know, when you go to some of the bigger, and I've covered still, and I still got to a bunch of EPC games this year, the size of the coaching staff. You guys really, I don't know what your total number of people are, but it's far less than what I see out of Parkland or an Easton and mm-hmm. some of those schools. And you got to do more, but I think you like that. I think you like being, you know, that everybody's got to do their job, and you can maybe have more of a direct impact with everybody in that team.
Yeah, it could be. You know, we have less programs. You know, my staff's coaching 9 through 12. We don't have a freshman team, and we don't have a separate JV team. So all those staffs come from our varsity staff. We coach them like everyone's a varsity player, and then, you know, on Monday some of them will go play a JV game. But yeah, that staff. Maybe that's like, you know, it makes the staff very important. I know I love my staff. They're some of the best coaches I've ever been around, and they get better and better. Seem to get better every year, and maybe that's because we do coach all of them. I mean, we coach all of them from 9 through 12. We coach all of them every year.
Real quick. Why do you do what you do? Because Paul, as concisely as you can. Because look, there's a lot of time involved here. For the amount of time you spent, there's not a lot of money in this profession. There's some, you know, it's demanding. The administration wants you to win. The community wants you to win. The parents want you to play their kids. There's a lot of stress on a football coach in 2017, or even a basketball coach or softball coach. But why do you must, you know, always enjoy what you're doing to still be involved, I think, all these years?
I can, you know, pretty quickly say it just over the last few weeks. You know, this was one of the toughest seasons, not wins and losses, but just overall toughest seasons of dealing with everything going on that I had had. And, you know, I went down and spent 3 weeks with Kevin. And I watched the way his staff flew around, the way his kids flew around, the energy, you know. And it, you know, I got excited. And standing on the sideline and watching some of their games, it got me excited again. When I walked into the players' meeting today at Liberty, and the kids, they wanted to meet me. They wanted to know you. And that's what you get from kids when you coach them. And I really think that's a lot of what has driven me to stay in it as long as I have, is, you know, they want what you know. Mm-hmm. And they want to win. They want to compete. And you can't fool them. You know, you're not going to fool them. You have to be committed to them, and they have to understand, you know, what it also means to you. So, I mean, I've gone through a lot of why, you know, in a short period of time, but it's, you know, it's being with the kids and getting to teach them something that we all think is very important.
All right. Well, thanks so much for joining us. Paul, it's going to be great to see you at Liberty next year. Kevin, I know you got some great sophomores coming by, so you're going to be probably one of the teams to beat in the Colonial League again next year, too. So much success to both of you next year.
Yeah, thank you.
Good
thank
guys.
You. Thank
good, you. Good coaches, good, good men.
All right, we're going to take a break. Nick Lincoln, the head coach at Inhotep Charter, is going to be coming up right after this break. We also have that trivia question out there. Don't forget, one more reminder, you can, if you don't get through on the phone lines with the correct answer, you can email us, whether you're watching us on replay, through On Demand on the Morning Call website, or listening to our podcast. The question one more time, Bethlehem Catholics, Javon Clements became the sixth BECA football player this year to pass for over 2,000 yards. Name the other five in Golden Hawks history that have passed for over 2,000 yards. The email address, rcnsportstalk@rcn.com. More sports talk straight ahead. Welcome back to RCN Sports Talk, presented by The Morning Call, along with Keith Groller and myself. We're joined via the phone lines by the head coach at Inhotep Charter High School, Nick Lincoln, is joining us. Coach Lincoln, thanks for joining us this evening.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on your success so far this year and a big win last weekend. Three years at Penwood, but you had been the offensive coordinator at Inhotep before coming back as the head coach. So could you talk a little bit about that decision to come back to Inhotep? And I know it's a little different scene from Penwood to Inhotep. So what brought you back?
Yeah, initially leaving was just about getting the opportunity to be a head football coach. And then when I got the call at the end of February, it was a tough decision because, you know, I put a lot into that program at Penwood, and those kids mean a lot to me, and that was probably one of the hardest meetings I've ever had with a group of young men, letting them know I decided to move on. But ultimately, for me, it was just about wanting to maintain the success and legacy at Imhotep, and I was excited about getting back in the doors over there.
How nice is it to be, because I've seen Inhotep a lot over the years, and you always have a great balance of size and speed. I mean, there's some teams that can get to the state playoffs and have some success with just primarily running the ball, or last week I saw a Ceilings Grove team that passed for over 3,500 yards, and they had run the ball about 1,500 yards, too. Your teams are always well-diversified, and you can play and win several different ways. Is that more fun to coach a little bit when you have different weapons like that and can win different ways?
Yeah, it's exciting. I think sometimes, you know, you got to figure out how to be balanced and get everybody an opportunity to make plays on the field. But it is exciting, and I think our kids are ready to do whatever we need to do in order to win games. So that's nice. Nice to have that in your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Coach, the opening game again so long ago, was it a week before Labor Day, 3 months ago.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that you've improved since then. Did you learn a lot that about your team against Harrisburg that was to your benefit? It's not always great to start the season with a loss, but when you play a quality opponent like Harrisburg, I'm sure there was some benefit that came out of that game.
Yeah, you know, and I'd take that game again in a heartbeat, knowing that we lost. I think for my team, a lot of people maybe don't get that, you know, we were really inexperienced week zero. We had about four kids that had played in that state championship against Erie last year. And I got a really talented group of juniors, but they're all kind of stepping into some new roles. So, I mean, we learned a lot. I think it humbled us in a really good way. I think, you know, it kind of prepared us for a game like this. Like, we've been in that moment. Harrisburg did a great job of hosting. There was tons of people there, and the environment was rocking. So I think our guys are ready for this moment.
Coach, I wanted to ask your thoughts on Bethlehem Catholic. They won by one play this past week, a two-point conversion that was close to being complete. It wasn't. They move on. It was a thriller with Ceilings Grove for them. When you look at them on film, what's your impressions of them? Obviously, they have a very balanced backfield and a quarterback that's thrown for a lot of yards.
Yeah, they're tough. I don't take a lot of heat into last week's score or anything. I think every game's different, and I noticed, like I said, they got three backs that can tote it. I think they got one kid back last week, which is going to help them a lot. And they just look like they're balanced as well. They do a lot of things with the RPO game. Their quarterback's smart. He's poised. I think they have a lot of kids on that team this year that are kind of looking to get some revenge from last year's Imhotep victory.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk about the last year's game at all? Because it was close, and I know him, Hotep, a lot of times over the years has a large margin of victories in their games. But last year, Becca kind of kept a little bit closer than you're usually used to. Did you talk about last year's game at all when preparing for him this year?
Yeah, I mean, we watched it. We watched the tape some as a team. You know, the guys that had some legitimate playing time in that game have kind of explained to the other guys how physical that game was and how excited, you know, Becca probably is getting back into this opportunity with us again. And I think, you know, we got to take that seriously because they're fired up and ready to get the Hershey as well as we are. And I think it's going to be a great game and great atmosphere out there in North Philly. So I'm excited for it. I think my kids are ready. I think, you know, they're expecting a physical, tough game. You know, we're expecting this to go down to the fourth quarter, and we're going to give everything we got every moment out there.
Every year, Impotep has been known for just putting great athletes on the field. Do you have some kids with some Division I aspirations? Has anybody committed?
Right now, in our senior class, we have the our free safety and running back, Asheem Young, is committed to Penn State. We have a tackle, O'Shea Jackson, is committed to Old Dominion University. And then we have a couple juniors that have some legit interest and offers, but nobody that's really decided where they want to go.
Asheem Young, I believe you said, is going to Penn State. He's a two-way player for you. And sometimes, you know, you don't have two-way players. Sometimes you do. But, you know, I heard he's an outstanding safety. And, oh, by the way, he's rushed for about 800 yards on the ground, too. So he's a stud on both sides of the ball. So, you know, could you talk about him and some of the other two-way players that you have?
You know, like going back to when I was at Imhotep prior, it was kind of like we tried really hard to be a two-platoon team. And And that's been the philosophy at Imhotep for the last couple of years. And I think coming into this year, we just kind of, you know, we got to put our guys on the field at all times. And Sheem really hasn't had to be the every down back, you know, because we have two juniors that have been carrying the ball really well this year too. But, I mean, he's a difference maker. He brings something different to the game. I mean, he caught a flat route last week in Valley View 2 seconds before the half and spun out of a would-be tackle and went 70 yards down the field. He does special things that are like cerebral. I mean, you can't coach some of the things that he's able to accomplish on the field. And then Omar Spates, our DN, he also plays a little H-back for us. And when he comes in on offense, I mean, he'll hit you. And then, you know, we just got a couple guys up front that play both ways, just not consistently throughout the whole game. We try to do a good job of rotating. But, you know, in this game on Friday, like, there's, you know, we're not holding back anything. There's nothing to – I mean, I'm looking at it like it's a one-game season. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Coach, how about the schedule that you did? We know that you played Harrisburg. The one thing that kind of Becca holds its hat on is that they play in a very good conference here called the Eastern Pennsylvania Conference, and Parkland's in it, Whitehall, lot of good, that's where Saquon Barkley went, a lot of good teams in that league. How about your level of competition, the schedule you played?
You know, I think Philadelphia football is tough in general all around. I think people might judge it from the outside looking in, but I think people's records might be a little different if they had to come in and play this level of football every year. And, you know, I give credit and hats off to all the coaches and programs that we've gone against. You know, there are some programs that games are a little bit lighter than others, but at the same time, I think our approach has been the same since Harrisburg until now. Like, we kind of try to give the same respect and due diligence in film and scheme that we do to every opponent. So in terms of how our kids prepare for the game and how our coaches, like, we're ready to go regardless of who lines up on the other side.
How determined and how hungry are your kids? Because, yes, you did get to the state final, but unlike the, you know, 2 years ago, you lost the Erie Cathedral Prep last year. How determined are they to get back to that game in Hershey?
Yeah, I mean, today that was kind of our talk after practice. I mean, it was like, you know, we spoke about how how hyped up Becca's going to be to get revenge on us. But, like, our goal is kind of, like, to fix some stuff that happened last year to us in the state championship. And we know, like, you know, this game is every bit of, in terms of competition, the same as the state championship. But, like, we're determined to get back to Hershey and correct what happened last year and try to make some noise again. So our kids are really aware and they're really excited about getting there. You know, it's only – Hershey for 4A is we'd be playing right now in a week. So it's like the season's coming to an end. It was big for the seniors today. I'm like, you know, you don't want this to be your last practice. You know, like we want to know when your last practice is. Let's have it next Wednesday. Let's not have this like guessing. So I think the guys are excited and ready to go.
Our special guest this segment on the phone line, Nick Lincoln, the head coach at Inhotep Charter High School. I want to ask you a little bit about your quarterback. You had a first-year quarterback after Nazir Boykin was there for several years and did such an amazing job. Talk about his maturation process. To jump in and play some of the teams you've played, especially like Harrisburg, what has been his level of confidence and his growth this year? And I think he went like 2 months without an interception there. So obviously he must have gotten acclimated to the speed of your game pretty quickly.
Yeah, I'm really, really proud of his effort and work this year. You know, he didn't even play high school football last year. He was playing for one of the area, the Northwest Raiders. He actually won the national championship for Pop Warner last year as a linebacker. So we didn't really have a guy. It was the first time Imhotep hasn't had a multi-year starter in a long time, because when I was at Imhotep prior, we had a four-year guy, Andre Druitt Parks, and Nasir Boykin came in for 3 years and really led us, and now it was like the first time that there was that question mark going into the off season, and he competed in the summer in 7-on-7, and you know, Harrisburg, things didn't work out the way we wanted them to, but he got that pressure and that feeling, and I think he just continued to improve to the point where, like you said, his production with the ball and his you know, it's almost sometimes to a fault how, you know, precise he is with where he wants to go, and he's really intense on not giving the ball to other teams. So it's worked out well to our advantage.
All right, Coach, thanks so much for your time and best of luck this weekend. Yeah,
good luck Friday night.
And that'll do it for Keith and myself. We'll see you next on the next week's edition of RCN Sports Talk presented by The Morning Call. Good night.